after midnight. Both my arms and legs were sore.
This is the music of John DeCoste. He'll be in tomorrow.
On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before.
I think we have details on how you can win the John DeCoste song contest.
And I wish that there was someone I could call.
I'll bring it up to him again tomorrow, but basically you can get a Valentine's Day song that John will write just for you and your main squeeze.
I have edema on my thighs, pink stuff in my eyes, and I need you now.
Good morning, Dr. Kevin Most.
I've got a stomach.
Good morning, Steve.
How was your weekend?
Hey, you know what? I didn't stay up for the Grammys. Did we win a Grammy? Did John win that with our song?
John did not win a Grammy. He was nominated in 14 categories and lost in all of them. Shocker.
I thought this was going to be our year.
I thought it was, too. It was quite a shock.
We can nominate this segment next year for Spoken Word.
We could, but it's not Spoken Word, though. True. Nominate this segment.
This segment.
Oh, no, he's talking music. This segment? I don't know, Doc. Just because Larry Wirt loves this segment and he runs this company. How are you, by the way?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. A couple things in the news from last week we want to talk about, and then Andy Mazur has a question for you.
Yeah.
Legionnaire's disease is back in the news. Now, this is not, if you're not familiar with Legionnaire's disease, this is not a condition that makes you stop at a local pub with other members of the American Legion, eat fried chicken, and drink beer. That's not Legionnaire's disease, right, Doc?
Correct. Yep. That's another Legionnaire's issue.
That's a Legionnaire syndrome.
Right.
Is this the thing Governor Rauner stayed at the Veterans Home over?
Yeah. So, you know, Governor Rauner went to the Veterans Home and stayed for a week. And it was the same Veterans Home that a couple years ago they had an outbreak of Legionnaires where they ended up with 13 veterans dying from the disease. So, you know, he went there to make sure to say, hey, you know what, we acted on this appropriately and we've corrected everything and we've cleaned this place up. But it just highlights again the incidence of this disease and want to make sure everyone is at least aware of it.
Can you clean up, though, Doc? I mean, because when this kept happening and then Governor Rauner said, I'm going to check into this building, and then people were saying, we'll just tear it down and start from square one. Can you clean it up and then it's gone?
Yeah, it's actually interesting. When you look at Legionnaires, we've seen outbreaks of this around the world, and what it always comes down to, it's collections of water where the bacteria are allowed to multiply and then get aerosolized. So if you can get rid of that standing water around, you know, cooling areas, air conditioners, heaters, humidifiers, that's where the bacteria sits and is then given a chance to get in the aerosol. Because this is a bacteria, you can have a glass of water and it can have Legionnaires in it. You can drink the whole thing and not get sick at all. It's only when it gets aerosolized and it's brought into your lungs do you end up with disease.
How long does it last, if it's not cleaned up? Can it live for a while?
It can. It definitely can live in these contained water areas for quite some time. So the importance is for your maintenance people to look for this collection of water and make sure that it's not there. You know, you get that little dripping off the air conditioner at times. Make sure that it's not pooling anywhere. The humidifiers, really, at this time of the year, a lot of people have humidifiers because the air is so dry. You really don't want to have those when you're using a water source that could have Legionnaires in it.
What is this importance of a pencil-sized stream of water that I heard when you wash your hands?
Right. So even after this, what happened after Rauner was there, they happened to have a broken pipe in the Capitol building. They did testing and found that they had Legionella bacteria there as well. So they told everybody, okay, turn off all your humidifiers, and when you wash your hands, use a pencil-size stream of water. The reason for that is not to aerosolize the bacteria. So you just can't turn it on. So the water's coming out, but it's not splashing up. They took all the little aerosolizers off of that because that's how it happens. The bacteria gets in the air. So as long as it's not, as long as the water is not being rushed and pushed up into the air, you have no chance of getting the disease.
But you can't get it from drinking the water.
Nope, can't get it from drinking the water. It's kind of an unusual bacteria. Can't get it from drinking the water, and you're not contagious when you have it. So someone that has it is not coughing this bacteria up. So it's a little bit of a weird one, and you have to remember, we've only known about this bacteria for a very short period of time. This was in 1976 when this Philadelphia hotel where they had the American Legion conference going, where close to 200 people came down with it, and 30 people died. So It was it's a nasty bug, and fortunately now we have new antibiotics that we can actually treat this.
Before we get to the other news topical topic, Andy, what was your question?
Yeah, you know, Doc, I have some friends that are kind of swearing by these brand new, or I don't know how new they are, but these IV clinics where you can kind of go in and if you have a hangover or if you're not feeling well, they can get you rehydrated, put vitamins and minerals. How safe are those? And I mean, do you recommend those kind of things?
Yeah, you know, Andy, it's a great question because they're very popular right now. So for the most part, the IV clinics that are the cure for a hangover actually work pretty well, because the biggest part of hangovers after taking in too much alcohol is dehydration and, again, losing some of your electrolytes. So what they're doing is they're putting the fluids back into you and filling it up quickly. So actually, for a cure for a hangover, it's probably not a bad idea. And for the age group that we're talking about, they can handle a liter of fluids. They can handle a liter and a half of fluids. You don't want to use this in someone who's elderly, who's a little bit older, whose heart can't take that additional volume at that time, and you end up putting them into what we call congestive heart failure. But for these young people, it's probably better to limit your alcohol intake. But those of you who have and say, gosh, I have to feel better because I have to do X, Y, or Z, they're I guess I can't say that they're bad, because they actually do exactly what we want.
Well, I've seen them at golf tournaments too. Like, if you're outside, you know, in a hot day and you're playing 36 holes of golf in between, you can be hooked up to an IV and rehydrated.
Yeah, actually, anybody who's going to get dehydrated, it's obviously the biggest thing is you say, okay, we'll take fluids and drink it in. Well, only so much is absorbed, but when we put the IV into you, we're putting it obviously right back into your bloodstream, and it's actually filling your tank back up at that time.
But these clinics that Andy's talking about, are they regulated?
They're somewhat regulated. You have to have a doctor's order in order to get it, so that there's at least a physician who's writing the order. Now, how much that they are actually, you know, taking electronic medical record, doing all the work, doing any safety checks, I really don't know that much behind them. But I can tell you that they are popular, and unfortunately probably getting more popular, which again says something about our alcohol intake and how we need to control that versus saying, oh, I can do whatever I want because tomorrow I'm going to have my cure.
What do you think it is, Andrea, about that seat that, you know, Andy's sitting in its chair now? And
I know.
There's always a booze-related question that comes out of
you know, and when he initially said, I'm going to ask Doc about these IV, I thought from a medical standpoint, I did not even think from a hangover standpoint.
A little bit of both, you know.
Uh-huh.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Doc, we'll talk concussions in Super Bowl week here when we come back. Stand by for that. Back to Dr. Kevin Most. All right, Doc, so it's Super Bowl week. Who you got? Might help if I put him on the air. Doc, it's Super Bowl week. Who you got? Why am I not hearing him? Well, hold on, Doc. Doc, there's two buttons I have to mash for you to get on the air. So it took all of my technology knowledge to make it work. Are you with me now?
Now I'm with you, and you've asked me three times, and I flip-flop my changes.
Okay, so who you got?
I'm going with New England. You have to. You know, it's as much as you'd like to see them lose, there's a pretty good chance that they're going to win.
Don't you think you could? Tom Brady could get his head cut off, and he'd still find a way to win.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
It's ridiculous.
It's amazing how they've come back in some very cool games. It's made them somewhat exciting. So I just hope it's a good game.
All right, just the other day, we were on the air talking about this concussion bill that was coming up that would say kids 12 and under could no longer play tackle football in the state of Illinois. Where is the medical field on this?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of people that are very concerned, obviously, about concussions and everything that we're learning about them right now. I think if you polled the entire medical field, I bet you it's going to be 80-20, 80% saying, you know what, it's probably not a great idea. Let's not damage these young kids' brains early on because we really don't know what's going to happen with these kids that are hit at 5, 6, 7, 8 years old and long-term effect of it. But we know that there's something called the dose-response relationship, and that's just a very simple way to describe something. It says the more times an incident occurs, the higher likelihood of the response occurring. So that's what they're looking at right now.
And this bill, should it go forward, would allow kids to play at the age of 12 and older. Why is 12 and older better?
Well, I think what they're trying to do is just push it off until the kid gets into close to high school. If I told you, if I asked you what Tom Brady, Walter Payton, Lawrence Taylor, and Jerry Rice all had in common, do you know what it is?
They all played football.
They didn't play football until they were in high school.
Is that true?
Yep.
That's true.
I didn't know that.
So none of them played youth football. So I think what they're looking at, and we've had a couple of studies that have shown that these kids that are playing youth football in the ages of like 8 to 10 have had brain changes within that year. Now, we don't know whether those are going to be long-term, whether they resolve, but that's one study that's going on right now.
For more information on this, where do you send them other than to your fine notes, which we post after every time you're on the air?
You know, there's, if you just go to the CDC and look up CTE, but then also, you know, Boston has a big CTE clinic. That's where a lot of these players right now that have died are donating their brains. So there's a lot out there for it. Now, you're going to have a lot of people on both ends. You're going to have a lot. It'll be interesting when you talk to Coach Ditka today and to see what he feels. But you're going to have a lot of people that say, hey, we need these kids in organized sports. They learn a lot. They learn about teamwork. They learn about camaraderie. They learn about discipline. And if we don't have that, what are we going to do? But I also look at it and say, let's at least try to make the game safer for them. Let's have better equipment. When you look at these youth football kids, you've seen them, right?
Yeah.
Their helmets barely fit them. You know, it's like, wait a second.
Well, it's cute until it's not, because they're little people. They're little tiny people with giant heads because they have these giant helmets on. So it's the Dave Durison Act. Is that what it's called?
Yep.
So you could also Google that.
Doc, for parents who, though, insist on having their kids start young, what else can they do besides have these overprotective helmets? I mean, they're probably too young to educate them on the dangers of being concussed, but what else can parents do?
Yep, I guess probably one of the big things parents can do is watch their child when they play and watch them very closely, because unfortunately we don't have physicians on the sideline for these youth football games in many cases. So you have to look at that kid after a hit. Is he getting up and is he wobbling a little bit, and getting him off and having someone check him? Wearing the right equipment, wearing a mouth guard, some of these things are at least going to at least minimize the chance or lower the chance. But the biggest thing is identifying it, because the worst thing that can happen is a concussion on top of a second concussion. That's why we now have concussion protocols that keep these kids out and keep adults out as well until that concussion is totally resolved.
I suppose it's like if you had a bruise on your arm and then you said to someone when it's really, really sore, punch me again in the exact same spot.
Exactly. You know, you already have done damage to that area, and now you don't want to do damage on top of it.
Last question, Andy.
Well, I'm just saying, to kind of piggyback along with that, it really comes down to coaching as far as football is concerned, because you're taught to keep your head up, you know, and not use the crown of your helmet when you're playing football.
This is my pet peeve about all of football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody tackles anymore. Yeah. Everyone's a human missile.
Yeah, they got to launch with their helmet and lead with their helmet. It's a penalty, first of all, and it's unsafe.
Yeah, it's stupid. That's what cost the New Orleans Saints the game against the Vikings. Doc, nice work by you as always, but I'd expect nothing less. And we thank our friends at Northwestern Medicine. What's the day today at Northwestern Medicine? Just going to go out and save a few more lives?
Yeah, today we just turned on our new electronic medical record this past weekend. So today will be a day just to make sure that all the docs have all their stuffs and ready to go. So
I bet you're a popular guy today. Doc's job, by the way, for you guys that don't know, he manages all the doctors. It's part of his job. So part of his job is to listen to the doctors whine when something gets changed. I bet that's going to be fun for you today.
Well, I'm going to lock my door and actually, we have a great group of docs here, 1,200 docs on staff at CDH, and I can tell you that they won't complain. They're going to say, hey, we're going to get through this, and it'll be fine.
Oh, look, of course they'll complain, but if they do complain, it doesn't mean you're not going to do it. You're going to do it at the highest level. That's how you guys got to where you are.
Absolutely. We got a great group of docs out here.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. Dr. Kevin Most, talk to you later.
You take care.
All right, news next, 720 WGN.